This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
So we are back in Europe. You can instantly tell we're in a bit of an echoey room, but it is a quiet room otherwise. In fact, it's so quiet you'll hear me bouncing off of all of the walls here.
Yeah.
We are in Europe and back, we cannot believe it, driving the Ring and Spa. We're actually on the Ring today and we have the Spa still ahead of us.
The biggest thing we have to worry about in Europe is to decide what kind of water we want to drink, with gas or without gas.
Yes.
Mit gas is my choice.
But the default setting, sorry, I cannot believe we're ranting about water. The default setting is fizzy water, and I am not, I don't need fizzy water. I just would like water.
I like fizzy water. It's good.
You know, the way it runs down in a stream, as close as we can get to that. That's what we're looking for. So anyway, these are the ways Paul and I continue to be different, but we are here with actually Hooked on Driving this time. Lots of Hooked on Driving drivers. First trip we've ever done as the Hooked on Driving group, which is really funny. And the folks at RSR, I was talking to a couple of them today, they're confused because they're used to seeing us wearing Everyday Driver logos. And we're here wearing Hooked on Driving logos, and they're a little confused, but we're connecting the worlds. The world's getting very small. It's wonderful. It's great to be back on this track, though.
It really is. We both had some great laps in Cayman GTS 4.0, which is delightful.
I know you're struggling with it. Yeah.
Just delightful. The rotation is excellent. And it's really cool. Ron actually didn't recognize you with your beard.
He did. Yes. I walked in with my, my goatee and my hair pulled back in a ponytail. He didn't know who I was at first. So we had to reconnect those dots, but then he's like, oh, hey, I know you, which is good. We are continuing to enjoy these Hooked on Driving events. Keep in mind, you can still come to Europe with us later in the year. That is October this year, the 13th through 17th. You can still come to the Ring and Spa with Paul and I. That will be happening later in the year, and you can sign up right now on the Hooked on Driving website. Plus, we have a lot of other events happening as well.
Yeah, speaking of events, Hooked on Driving at Sonoma is tomorrow, Wednesday, May 1. If you still haven't signed up, then you can still. It's at Sonoma Raceway and also Portland International, May 2 and 3. Chef Ben is returning. If you're familiar with Chef Ben, is back. And food actually matters. We've been discussing food
while we're
here. So food is good
you said
track day.
It's almost like we are a foodie club with a car problem. Not really. We're more about the cars. But lunch matters. This is the thing we conclude the more track days we do is that lunch really does matter, which is very funny. But we've got a really cool discussion about car nameplates as a topic Tuesday, and then a car debate coming up where in the title, the comment was that Matt does not want an 86 or a Cayman. So right now, Paul and I are stumped. We're going to have to figure that out. And then, of course, we're questions.
Instantly stumped.
I don't know what we're going to do. We have other good questions coming up from you guys as well.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Whatever car you're looking for and wherever it's listed, you'll find it with AutoTempest.com. AutoTempest.com brings together results from all the top used car listings anywhere online to save you time and help you find the perfect car. It even lets you compare with nationwide results from Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and far beyond your local area.
Plus, you can now get email alerts for your search, so you're sure not to miss anything. You can even price and find new cars from nearby dealers. That's why AutoTempest is now the official sponsor of all our test drive videos. We use it to search for new cars or used cars wherever they are.
So when you're doing your drive homework, or you're chasing your next family car, or you're just browsing so you can see what's out there, go to AutoTempest.com/everyday. So they know we sent you. Auto Tempest. All the cars, one search.
Andy L. writes to us as a longtime listener. Andy, thank you for writing. He found us at the car show, LA car show, LA auto show.
Yep.
A few years ago and took a picture. So you sent along the photo and I can't believe, gosh, we look so young.
We're still doing this too, which is what's even crazier. Yeah, it's awesome that we get to. It's fantastic.
Appreciate it, Andy. Well, he's got a good topic Tuesday. He says, with manufacturers reviving old nameplates, when is the appropriate time to revive a nameplate? Or when should a manufacturer just let the nameplate rest in plate heaven? Are companies doing it because they have FOMO since others are doing it, or do they simply pull on the heartstrings of the group of people with the biggest buying power, Gen X and or millennials? Don't forget Gen Z there coming up too. But we see in recent years the Venza, the Supra, now the ZDX, potentially a new Prelude. Will we see the return of the Cadillac Cimarron, the Kia Amante, or even the Hyundai Excel? Battle it out with Microsoft, Hyundai.
That's very funny. All right.
But whatever nameplates the OEMs revive, 90% of them will be an SUV in some way or another.
Probably. Look, the horrifying thing is I'm just envisioning the new Cadillac Cimarron. That was such a disaster the first time. It's one of those nameplates that they brought it back. It'd be like Ford revives the Pinto. If you brought it back, people are just going to be like, really? But actually, at the core of this, Andy, I want to talk about intellectual property. Because ultimately, what we're dealing with in every case is you have teams of people at these car companies trying to figure out names. It's one of the reasons why a lot of times...
Top men.
Well, a lot of times the Raiders of the Lost Ark reference there, I really like that. The thing is that you've got teams of people, and many of them are lawyers, trying to figure out a name that they can use as a company that is not already copyrighted somewhere, that they can get all the things for it, the website, the naming rights, the on and on and on and on and on. And this is becoming more and more difficult. I mean, I am continually astonished that Kia was able to get Telluride and Hyundai was able to get Palisade and nobody had ever done those at all. It's getting harder and harder to have a name. And so one of the big things is this is something that the manufacturers, if they have a name already that they aren't using, that is the far easier road than going and figuring out a brand new name. So if you have a name like Cimarron that has a bad taste in people's mouth and everything in their memory is don't do that, or Pinto, you may have the rights and now you can't use, like Ford's never going to do another Edsel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
But so you can't do one that has a bad connotation, but if the connotation of it was positive, that's the other thing. The reason why every movie studio on the planet, or take Netflix streaming series or whatever, they're doing things that are pre-established intellectual property. Because the thing is, take Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Prime Video just did Fallout.
Right.
Netflix just did the three-body problem. The point in all of these is that even if your new product under the old name is terrible, you instantly have some level of audience awareness without you doing one bit of marketing. So this is the reason that that comic books are becoming movies. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not saying that Barbie wasn't a solid movie because it was, but is there a better known toy name in the world than Barbie? So even if it wasn't good, the entire world knows what the movie's going to be roughly about because it happens to be a name that everybody's heard. So any current car name that is not being used that has a good connotation, expect it to be resurrected because they have this intellectual property thing solved and it's instant marketing dollars without spending dollar one.
That's interesting. Andy, I just saw news that Toyota might revive the Starlet name and make it a GR. Can we start in with the jokes?
The GR Starlet?
The GR Starlet.
I am confused.
Smaller than the Yaris?
I was going to say that's smaller than the Yaris.
Uh-huh. Starlet, GR Starlet.
It happens to, at that point, it's just
rally breeding.
It's just the GRlet. Is this a three-wheeler?
It's a what single cylinder three-wheeler.
It's going to have to
with
be.
With 500 horsepower. This is the recipe.
50 PSI going through one cylinder. It's really awesome until it blows up. The new Starlet.
I'm thinking about the car names and you've got me. Gosh, Andy, you got me thinking about this Cimarron. I feel like...
It'd be the Cimarique. They'd have to end it in an IQ. It'd be the new Cadillac Cimarique.
And when the photos get onto the internet, they've gotten leaked.
Oh no.
Thank you, Jordan. Shout out to Jordan. He pulled that on me. So I think about these names, and I'm wondering that some of them don't have as bad a connotation as people thought or remembered. So if car companies wait long enough, Andy, then they can pull out this old car name and the new crop of current buyers don't really have any association unless my mom had this and she hated it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they pull out the old nameplate, mm-hmm. rename the car.
Yeah.
And they don't have any association or connotation with the thing. And they just think, okay, here it is. Mm. It's along the lines of movie studios bringing out the new movie. And in parentheses, they put the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you know mm-hmm. that, okay, this was the year that they did whatever.
And the movie Star is Born has been done 3 times. Okay. Now you
they put the year after all of them.
Well, you don't technically in the title, but when they get listed anywhere official, IMDb and anywhere else officially, you have to have the year so you can identify which one we're talking about. But it was done in the 30s. It was done in the 70s with Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand. And then, of course, you've seen the recent one with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. But it's the same
not so recent anymore
story. Well, compared to one in the 30s, it's very recent. It's the same story. It's the same concept every time. With different music. So, yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
I mean, they could do different movies for the Bond era, like redo the whole thing. I guess they could keep coming up with names, but they could do, yeah, all kinds of stuff for...
But you're speaking to what I'm saying as well, and that is you've got instant market awareness. And in this fractured media landscape where it's really hard to get noticed... Having anything where people instantly go, oh, haven't I heard of that? You're already first step because yeah. You've gotten out of the general noise to notch one, but you haven't spent anything yet. You've just given it a name with recognition. Then you can build on that because it got lifted out of the den. The tiniest bit, this matters for entertainment like crazy. I can't even tell you how much it matters for entertainment, but I think it matters for actual products you buy in general and cars being the first.
I mean, the Thomas Crown Affair. They'll put the date after it so yeah. you know which of the two Thomas Crown Affairs.
Yeah, it was Steve McQueen originally. It was Pierce Brosnan the second time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, totally. This is a thing.
They could put the designer name instead of the year after the new model comes out. So this was designed by some guy you've never heard of.
Yes.
And this new one was designed by some
other guy you've never heard of.
Somebody else.
But at least it's a different name.
The last name after the name of, in parentheses, instead of the year.
I really want a new Pinto and a new Cimarron now. That's
oh my gosh.
How can we reclaim those?
Do we really want those cars? I like this question, Andy, because we're here in Germany and we were instantly pointing out all of the cars that we don't get.
Yes.
Like, hey,
yes.
Look at the Peugeot weird thing and the Kia Ceed, and the Skoda Octavia and all these cool, funky names of
we
cars.
We saw an Audi A3 here today that I've never seen before.
Todd was like, what's this hunk of junk?
It was beat up, but the front half of it looked like Audis we got and the front half didn't.
Yeah.
And it was a two-door and I was like, what is this Audi? At first, I actually thought it was somebody who rebadged something. The more I looked at it, I was like, no, that's actually an Audi product. So it is amazing to see things that are vaguely familiar but aren't.
If car manufacturers don't do this, Andy, we are faced with a car future of internet-y names.
Oh,
contrived,
no.
Terrible internet-y names. Just put some letters and maybe numbers into a bowl and shake it and remove the vowels.
The key thing is removing the vowels. Everything is better if it doesn't have vowels. I don't know if you've heard this story or you've noticed this, but apparently for the last decade, every word is better without the vowels.
Just remove the vowels and then you have your cool, hip new startup company that's going to be featured at Y Combinator and attract a whole lot of investment dollars. And suddenly you're off to the races. Yay, my company got funded and it's not actually printing money yet. And it may or may not get bought, but if car companies start doing this and don't look to the past, but the problem is there's so many cars in the past that were terrible, mm-hmm. I think people would look it up and be like, ooh. And car manufacturers know this. Do we need another Ford Granada? Do we need something out of the bad Ford catalog?
Yeah, I hear you.
Because there was that era of the 70s where many cars were so bad. I mean, shoot, every era had its terrible cars that nobody wanted, but those are trademarked. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're up for use, but mm-hmm. the connotation, I think in some cases would stick around forever. It would just mm-hmm. follow mm-hmm. around like a stench. There's no getting rid of that smell.
This car just smells.
There is. No, yeah. New buyers would look that up. But I think with nameplates now, I still maintain that GM is going to bring the Camaro back.
Oh, yes.
Because Camaro is just cool all the way around. Now the problem we're getting into is if the car isn't cool and you do use a recognizable cool nameplate on that, that will also cause the same problem in an opposite way, Andy.
Yeah, that's
it's going to be some cool name. That's new. It almost happened with the Blazer. I mean, it kind of happened with the Blazer.
I think it did, yeah.
GM should have done something that competed with a Wrangler.
Yep.
Full stop, the end. Just make your version of the Wrangler. That's all you have to do. And people will buy it, and it'll be awesome because they know how to build a truck. But no, we got the Blazer that nobody recognized, so it was a cool name on a bad car.
Yep.
Not a bad car, but you know what I mean. It was a faceless, nameless.
Well,
it didn't say Blazer.
This was,
it was not Blazer.
The problem is it was something that didn't meet the connotation of the name. You're absolutely right there. And it actually reminds me of.
Did not when the rise to the challenge of Blazer.
Not, it did not blaze.
It did not blaze.
This just doesn't blaze or blend. It reminds me of the early, the mid-2000s Pontiac GTO, which was legitimately a solid car in its own right, called the Murano in Europe, okay? And I actually wonder if that car might have been more successful in the U.S. with a different name, because the GTO connotation said something that that car really didn't match, but that's GM looking down its history and going, what should this be that we already have a name for? And so they tried to connect the dots there. And I think that was a fail. And I've always wondered about that car with a different name in the U.S. Could it have been more successful? Because it was a legitimately solid car. We've recommended on the podcast. But was it a GTO? Does it, but I'm saying, it was called that, but I'm saying, does it have connotation of what the original GTO did? I don't think so.
And especially powertrains are going to affect buyers' perceptions. If it's just a 5-seat SUV painted anything, nobody's going to like it.
Blazer. This is what the Blazer, we actually did hear. We did get an email that apparently GM was toying with making a legit Blazer that was a competitor to the Wrangler. And then they probably said, let's not do that. But
cooler heads did not prevail.
No, the marketing folks.
They went off the deep end.
I don't know what happened there. Marketing lawyers. Somebody said we're killing this, and they were wrong. But anyway.
But here we've got the Mustang. But it's an EV. Wait. That's not a Mustang, and it's been out long enough. So we, audience, we've got to decide: is it truly a Mustang? Does it meet the Mustang name, or is it sullying the actual Mustang's name to the point where Ford's kind of screwed themselves on the new Mustang, because it's that's a Mustang and that's a Mustang, but no.
Well, and that's a great one to bring up, Paul. I really like that because it does bring us back to this discussion about the Mach-E. I think that could have been called the Mach-E and would have been great, but
it could still have Mustang-y styling and styling cues.
True.
Fine.
True.
Great.
But by using the Mustang name, for better and for worse, they did put it on all of our radar. Instantly. We all knew it was coming from Ford. It wasn't like, what is that now? We all were like, oh, did you know Ford's doing this? And
what is that now?
And also is one of these situations where it almost is like there's no such thing as bad press, because awareness was so high for the Mustang Mach-E, and I submit that it wouldn't have been half as well known if they hadn't put Mustang in the name. I wish they hadn't. I wish they didn't chase that styling, because it is a solid vehicle, legitimately a solid EV SUV choice if you want one. But I don't think it's a Mustang. However, I see the marketing benefit of it being that.
I like this question. I like what it's hopefully going to push car manufacturers to realize. I mean, they'll feel it from customers. If they bring back names that don't meet what a prior name meant, then people are going to resist. Customers are going to say no.
Yeah.
But the other problem is we're just going to get a litany of weird contrived names missing a letter or two or spelled with a K instead of a C.
Yeah.
And no, what on earth is this doing? So again, I come back to, in parentheses, the last name of the designer, whoever designed this vehicle.
Can you see that on the back of a tailgate? I would just love some of these back of these designer names on the back of a tailgate. Little parentheses and this tiny little lengthy word underneath in a different font.
See, then they could use the marketing to push the person who designed it and introduce the car that way. And here it is. And, you know, obviously there's never one designer that designs the car. It's an entire team of people to get a car out. But what other can, what else can we do? Because if it's just the year, well, that car wasn't built for 1 year, unless it's a BMW 1M, but still, it wasn't built for just 1 year, fair just point, like yes. a movie came out. So it has to be that's the good. Last name of the designer. They can make that designer famous. Everybody will know it. Oh, I didn't like that designer, but I like the new one and the next generation. The designer changes so that you can keep using the name.
All right. I didn't think we'd end up there, but that's a good solve.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
So if you've listened to the podcast for more than 5 minutes, you're going to understand why it's a struggle for someone to write us and say, I need a sports car, but you cannot choose 86 or Cayman. I'm already a little bit like, wait, I'm sorry, what now?
I'm super stumped.
I mean, there are others, obviously, but I'm making a joke about the fact that those are two that you have to drive. But the problem with this car debate of Matt writing in looking for something different and fun, and we will break it down, is that he drove both the 86 and Cayman that friends have, and he doesn't think either one of them are crazy enough. They're too composed.
This email is from Matt C, who says the answer isn't 86 or Cayman. Matt is lucky enough to be a point in his life where he's shopping for a fun car in the $50,000 to $60,000 range,
love
maybe
it.
A little more if he talks to the partner. He's in his early 30s and works from home, so he can comfortably retire the 2016 Fiesta ST that has served him well since he bought it when it was a year old.
Love it.
The Fiesta is moving on to its third recirculation valve, so it's time to put it out to pasture. His partner has another little hatch for grocery getting duties. Matt has owned several fun hatches, the Fiesta ST, a Mark V GTI, and a 318 Ti. But he thinks it's time to move on to something with real power and is more dedicated to the driving experience. He knows the default answers are usually that we talk about Cayman, we talk about 86, but he's driven both of them. He said an old roommate had an FRS and a buddy took delivery of a brand new 718. He says, while they're fun and good, they're too composed.
Hmm.
Too good, too composed.
Well, this is the interesting sentence. He says he doesn't feel like either of those cars ever feel like they're fighting you. It's an interesting sentence. Now, I wonder, a brief tangent here. When you drive a crazy front-wheel drive car like the Fiesta ST, you are always wrestling it a bit. I'm wondering if that tendency of front-wheel drive cars is a little bit of why he's feeling like these rear-wheel drive cars are less composed, because the wheel isn't doing anything else but steering. In the Fiesta ST, it is entirely too busy. It's crazy fun, but the Fiesta ST, that steering wheel is really busy all the time because it is doing everything. But a rear-wheel drive car doesn't have that. I'm submitting this to you, Matt, just in case, because I'm wondering if you are needing to change what you feel in the wheel, because a rear-wheel drive car is never going to feel at the wheel like a front-wheel drive car.
No, but when you turn in, something that has great steering feel will reveal itself differently, and it'll be fun. But
yes,
Matt, you say, I'm looking for something more lively. That is a very nice way of saying, fight me.
Yes,
I want
sure.
my car
yes.
to fight me.
Huh.
You want something truly powerful to break the chain of fun. But responsible front-wheel drive cars.
I don't know that the Fiesta ST is what I would call responsible, but it is phenomenal. But okay.
Responsible.
All right.
He moved to the Triangle in North Carolina, which means abundant access to great mountain roads and about an hour to VIR.
Love it.
Track days would be a couple times a year at most and should still be able to take he and his significant other and the luggage out to the coast for the weekend. So he's looking at the top contenders, which include the prior generation M4CS, that F82 generation, F82 M4 manual competition pack, or the last generation M2 competition, or a Mustang GT350, or a C8. He says the current M cars are unbearably ugly, so he's ignoring them. And okay. Matt, right. I have an admission to make. I'm not changing my mind on Beaver Teeth. I'm not super changing here.
Oh, where's this going?
But we're in Nürburgring, and there's a BMW dealership here in town. And you think, what on earth is a full BMW storefront, really?
And they always have the hottest, rarest thing in the showroom. That's literally all they stock. It's a showroom for two cars, and whatever's in there is unobtainium most of the places.
It's not really a dealership in the traditional sense. Actually, everything, the reason they have it is because you got to go around the back.
Yeah,
that's where they're actually doing all the wrenching on the cars. Right. They're doing some testing, and then they get sent out on the ring. But there's a glass kind of storefront that always seems dead with the nicest, most unobtainium, desirable, hot cars from BMW. And yet it looks like a diorama. It just looks like a museum as you drive by.
We've never seen people in there, and only about half the time are the lights even on.
Yeah.
It's always something like, I've never seen one of those BMWs. I've only heard about it. Yes. Always.
But here it is. They've got that purple M3, the new one. It's the G82, right?
I don't know.
Brand new one that has the beaver teeth, but it's the touring. It's the wagon in purple.
Yeah.
And it looks so good. It turned our heads.
Yes.
And neither Todd or I commented, wow, that's ugly. We just went, oh, there's the new M3 wagon.
Yes.
That's all we said.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I think we don't like it, but I think we have come to the reality that if you want that cool car right now, the nose is going to look like that. I think this is just so like,
that's how we
there
look,
it is.
Huh?
Okay.
But yet you've got this sweet tour and it's so good looking. I mean, I wouldn't choose black wheels, but that purple color, it's like Porsche's aubergine kind of thing.
The purple is so dark, you're right, that black wheels are completely wrong on that car.
It just doesn't look. You know what would look good is bronze or gold.
I'm shocked. Aren't you all shocked? Right now, sit down if you're shocked at what Paul did. You're not. You're all standing. I know. Yeah, I get it.
Top contenders. See, now you've got me changing my choices because, Matt, I was looking at Civic Type R. You say 50 to 60 grand. Civic Type R. Civic Type R.
Yeah, yeah.
Go get yourself a Civic Type R. Now, the wheel doesn't fight you, but guess what? Nothing will ever fight you like your Fiesta ST.
Yeah.
From here on out. I mean, it was kind of designed with that character.
It's just, well, I mean,
we call it a character flaw.
But it's a phenomenal car to drive, but that wheel is very busy. Yes, definitely.
So what about a Civic Type R?
I like that. That's good.
It doesn't matter that it's front wheel drive in the Civic Type R. I keep getting amazed. Like, those rear wheels are just sitting there. They're just kind of hanging out. And yet, what a great, fun car to drive. But if that's not, if it's too raw, you could look at the Acura version of it, the Integra Type S. But I think the more lively version, as you termed it, is the Civic Type R.
Agreed. I do totally agree. I think of what he's looking for, that is the more interesting one. Matt, I want to run down your list real quick, because to be honest with you, have you driven any of these BMW products you list?
Unclear. We don't know.
I'll be honest. The M4 CS last gen, the M4 manual compact, the M2 competition. I included the M2 CS version in here, which is the craziest version of the CS. I don't think any of those BMWs are going to feel lively enough.
I agree.
Because BMW has completely mute electronic power steering. Utterly mute, one of the most mute out there. And all of those big sedans are incredibly powerful and very contained in their body movements, even though they're really big cars. Now, they got a ton of power. You can certainly cut the back end loose and you can do that kind of stuff. But what I'm hearing from you is your sentence was you kind of want to fight with the car. And those BMWs are all those kind of vehicles where you can't believe you're going the speed it says because it doesn't feel like you're going nearly that fast. I think that's the wrong direction, and I suspect these BMWs are going to disappoint you. The only one on your list that you even included, same thought, you even included the Corvette C8, which we both love. We have one for the show. It's very, very good. I don't know that that's going to feel lively enough to you either.
Yeah, no,
the only one on your actual initial list, and I have others that I think might get close, is the Mustang GT 350. Because the engine is unique enough and the feel of that car and just kind of the rumble when you're sitting still is unique enough in that car that it might actually get it done. Of the ones you list, I think that's the closest. I have a few others, but where else did you go?
All I could think about is the Boss 302.
That's good. We put it with the GT350 originally. That's an excellent one. I really like that.
GT350 is good, but then we got over to the Boss 302 and it's sort of like a moment in time car.
Yeah.
Remember?
I see that.
2012, mm-hmm. 2011, somewhere in there. That car just buzzes with excitement.
It does.
And it's a little weird because it's a Mustang, and then they named it the Laguna Seca Edition, back to names like, ooh, that's a throwdown.
Yeah.
And it actually performed.
Yeah.
Weirdly, Matt, the Boss 302 is, it's got that feeling you're looking for.
Mm, that's good. That's really good.
Absolutely does. Because, you know, I'm rereading your sentence here. You want to break the chain of responsible front-wheel drive cars, and I suppose that Civic Type R could be considered that. But I think about that Mustang. It was just this weird little thing. But also, if you're looking at BMWs and you want to actually get something that is going to make you happy you spent your money,
okay,
we're going to have to spend more, but it is the 1M.
I wondered.
Sticking with moment in time cars.
Yeah, that's a much more interesting choice. Yeah,
that is interesting. Of all your BMWs on here, go get the 1M. They're going to be more expensive, more rare, but I think you will very much like your choice.
That's a good one. I have a couple others for you here, Matt. One is, I was trying to think about cars that when you're driving them, they feel like they might get away from you, but fundamentally, they handle really, really well.
Okay.
I was trying to kind of thread that needle. Also thinking about the fact that you don't want something really small. You want to have the ability to take road trips in it. So to go along with the Mustang GT350, I have to say the Camaro ZL1.
Oh.
Very powerful car, very capable car, a lot of attitude there. And that has a sister car in engine, which is the C7 Z06 Corvette. That car, look, you'll be shocked at the amount of like, let's go away for the weekend space in that car. But 650 pound-feet of torque and horsepower, by the way, in a package that can cruise or a package that can look like it's trying to hurt something. I mean, it depends on how you applied all your inputs. If you want crazier than that, I can go back a generation to the big monster engine C6 Z06. That big 7-liter naturally aspirated engine.
Yeah.
That is a very special car. Watch our Z06 comparison that's on YouTube from a few years back with the C5, C6, and C7 Z06s back to back to back. And that C6, it has a lot of personality and a ton of power. I think that those older Corvettes, you would feel more what you're looking for than you would from the C8. So I would say C6 or C7 Z06 are actually my number one choices for you. But I have two kind of crazy wild cards.
Oh, I like it.
One is going a completely different route and finding yourself, you've got up to 60 grand, find yourself the most recent Lotus Evora you can.
That's good.
That's good. It doesn't have crazy power, but it is powerful. It's over 400 horsepower. It is powerful. And it has a completely different, very engaging feel than almost anything else we've talked about here. Not a lot of storage space, but it does have back seats that are really just 2+2 storage areas. But you could absolutely road trip in that car. The Evora is a worthwhile one. And then my last wild card, as I read this, and you're looking for something that's the opposite of a responsible front-wheel drive car that you have to fight with, it's got to be the Dodge Viper. It's got to be Viper.
Oh, my gosh.
That is the seriously, I really do think you can actually create a chart that is the spectrum of madness with the Fiesta ST on one end and the Viper on the other.
How much do your friends hate you when they ride with you?
Maybe.
You're having fun, they're not. I don't know.
I think the Viper, and what's interesting is, you know, we've joked about this before, the Viper, everything about the styling of the Viper seems like that's a massive car. And once we got to the 992 generation, it was the 991 generation of the 911, it technically became like a half inch longer than a Viper. And that's crazy because the styling doesn't look that way. But we saw one on the ring today, and I have to say that now, 10 plus years on from that styling, it doesn't look like a big car at all. You see it in traffic. It's got presence, mm-hmm. but it's not that big.
Those are good choices. I've got one last one to leave you with, Matt. And looking at your BMW love here, why aren't you looking at a GR Supra?
That's good.
I think a GR Supra gets it done You can do track days with it. This is what it's designed for. This is the sweet spot with the GR Supra. Now, why haven't we suggested the new Z or the Nismo? The Nismo is more expensive. Mm-hmm. It's not a manual currently.
True.
We don't know if it ever will be. The Nismo is the one you want. If you want a Z car, the Nismo is the one. But it doesn't have as much engaging, but it is lively. It's interesting. True. I still prefer the GR Supra because it's lighter. It has a BMW quality feel to it. And yes, quality, but also the qualities, the characteristics of the car, very BMW-like. But I think that gets it done, and you've got your choice of transmission, and it's right at your budget, 60 grand, probably less. Why aren't you looking at a GR Supra?
We have a few questions. We're going to run through a few of those on the back end of this podcast. Thank you guys for listening, as always. If you haven't rated this podcast, we would love to get your rating and review on whatever platform you use to listen. We would love to get that. That always helps other people find the podcast.
This is not typical. Sorry for the echoey room. This is the best we could do.
This is where we are. We're going to have to refine this. We've got one more of these travel podcasts happening, then we're back in the studio. Also, a reminder real quick. This happens to be episode 893. For episode 900, we will be live on our Test Drive YouTube channel where you can see us do a live All Questions podcast. We will be back in the studio next week. Speaking of other things that are coming, do we have things coming? There is so much good video coming that we just can't even share yet that I'm very excited about. Also in the Salt Lake area on May the 11th, that Saturday, there's going to be an event down in Salt Lake. Our friends at Complete Detail Solutions are a Griot's detailing company. We try to go to them every year. They're going to do kind of a cars and coffee and a detail showcase that they do often. And we're going to be down there for that in the Salt Lake City area. So we'll have more information coming on that. And then I'm kind of teasing, but I'm kind of not. We may have a first look at the next Everyday Driver internal fleet car at that event. We're trying to connect the dots. Can we have that car at that event? I'm teasing it now because it's an idea we just had, but we're not sure if it's all going to work out yet. But we'd love to see you down there at that. And of course, lots of track days coming. Also happening that same weekend, the 10th, is the release of our Beartooth Highway Jackson Hole Rocky Mountain trip we're doing.
We're going
to release all of that. It will go to patrons first on the Thursday prior, the 9th, but on the 10th, it will be released for everybody else if it isn't sold out yet. So keep in mind, that is the last new trip we are launching this year, and that is coming under the Everyday Driver brand very soon.
Keith R. on Facebook says, why is the BMW i8 depreciated faster than the second generation NSX? I think it's because it didn't have enough cylinders.
I like that. I think ultimately that car was sold about 5 years too soon. I think if it came out I think it'd be taken a lot more seriously. Plus, it probably would have had better like EV only range. The problem was that car came out as a not great enough in any direction. And here's I'll be honest. I'm fascinated by the i8 as a used
bug.
Fascinated by it. But it wasn't enough of a sports car to be full on ultimate sports car. It wasn't enough of an EV to be a full-on EV. It was a bit of both. And I think it suffered in original buying that way. I think it suffers on the used market that way. And then it has the secondary problem that the NSX doesn't. And that is, it's just viewed as an outdated electric car.
Yeah.
And
I see it.
Takes the prices off right at the knees.
I think the NSX was associated with manual transmissions, Keith. And the fact that it was never going to be a manual transmission for the second generation was the death blow to that car. And it came out, I mean, we have a lot of manual transmissions nowadays, but again, you couldn't do a manual. Well, I suppose you could. If they had engineered it differently, they could have done the hybrid powertrain with a manual transmission.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think it, because NSX just was associated with mid-engine manual transmission, that would have kept it alive. And they can't go back and redo it now. They've kind of screwed themselves. But the i8 was such new weirdness, they didn't have to do that.
Well, and you know
what? It would have been cool, but they didn't have to.
We've also run right back to our topic Tuesday here. The other reason that the NSX is, I think, more valuable than the I-8 is the NSX has name recognition history.
Yeah.
And the I-8 is a one-off.
That's
so
true.
Even though the NSX did not become the success that you would want, and it ultimately, and this is where you're going, Keith, aren't they both newfangled tech hybrids? Yes. But one is this weird I-8 name that we don't know what it means, and we're just trying EVs. And the other is an NSX. So the brand recognition keeps that more alive.
All right, that's good. We've got a question from Mike Shapiro on Facebook. Not sure if we've covered this before, but he's curious, who are our favorite automotive or power sports journalists? I think F1 did themselves a disservice by letting Lee Diffie go. I think he was just engaging and has a fresh take on things and good voice. I think he should have continued on, but he didn't, and he does other stuff now. But Lee Diffie, I've always thought he did a great job.
I struggle with, and it's, I know this is ironic considering what you and I do for a living, but I struggle with sports announcers in general, because partially what you're doing with great TV coverage, F1's a great example, is there's great TV coverage. We could just watch. We could just watch. You don't have to have constant color commentary, but yet the job of the commentator is constant commentary.
Yeah.
You can't not say something. So I struggle with that a lot. I'm going to go back to the fact that I like the original Top Gear guys very, very much. Mm-hmm. And ultimately my favorite is James May. When James May hosts other things, I think he is phenomenal as well. I think he is underappreciated as a host, and I've always liked him. He grew to be my favorite of the three. It's one of those things where, of the original guys, that Clarkson is the one you notice because he's the big ball. He's like the big waving guy, the big inflated waving guy outside of a used car lot. You just can't help but notice him. But then But the reason you stick around isn't necessarily Clarkson, and I really like James May in that regard. And I, you know what, I always enjoyed the three guys that took over the Top Gear US. Rutger and Tanner.
Rutledge, yeah.
Rutledge, thank you so much. Rutledge and Tanner actually were pretty good. I enjoyed them as well when they were doing that part of the show. So that was cool. You know what? I'm also going to give a shout out to Jason Camisa, who does a phenomenal job on YouTube. He's not traditional media, but he's done a phenomenal job on YouTube. Yeah. His stuff is really good. And I feel like I mention him because he feels like he's doing something for a traditional brand, even though he's not.
Interesting. Dammy O on Facebook asks, if we had to get rid of all our cars today and had to replace them with one do-it-all fun vehicle for less than $20,000, what do we buy? Do-it-all for that price point would suggest probably an SUV. I hate to say it. Something like that. If you're wanting, hot hatch, I suppose we could find something all-wheel drive, hot hatch-ish.
Yeah.
And that would be the do-it-all for $20,000. Maybe a Golf R, like 2012. Something like that?
That's an interesting thought. I think that's a possibility. This is almost a topic Tuesday. I need to sit down and make lists. It's a great question from Dammy. I think I'd probably try to wind up with a sedan is probably what would happen for me. Mm. It'd be a fight with the family on that, but I think I'd probably try to fight for a four-door sedan with some agility. I mean, I might be able to find the cheapest Julia in the country for less than $20,000, but is that a scary car? Probably. Mm. But I think I'd go that route. You know what I might actually work my way into would be an older BMW to try to get dynamics and also get something that feels like a decent car to be in. I'd probably start to lean that route. I'd have to sit down with Auto Tempest and make a list to really do this right. It's a great question.
I like it. Anthony Z also says, why does his brother, who owns a 400 rear wheel horsepower SS Commodore manual, the Chevy SS, a mint NA Miata, just sold his Polestar S60 and has put an order in for an i20N, why does he get so excited for his fifth CVT Subaru wagon in 8 years? Maybe he doesn't have the disease.
Well, no, but here it is. Because he keeps replacing his hiking boot. That's what he's doing.
The hiking boot wore out and he needs a new one.
His expectation for it, this is honestly, we know plenty of people that are this way. We have people listening to the show that have an amazing car collection and will go on and on waxing lyrical about how great it is to commute in their Prius. Or they have a great car collection and they track and they're hardcore drivers, but they want to tell you about the minivan they just got for the family. What's happened here is you're talking about someone who their Subaru wagon perfectly meets the needs and expectations they have for the Subaru wagon's job. It's not car love. It's thing that does what I need it to perfectly.
That's good.
Strandsport on Instagram says he was disappointed that he's not going to be in Germany when we're going to be here. He's curious if we have plans for more meetups in Frankfurt before or after one of these trips. We're hoping to do that in our June trip over Father's Day. We're hoping to get some time, but we'll see if we can pull that off. He also asks if any of our trips here to the Ring and Spa are a la carte, meaning you don't have to do the entire thing if you live in Europe. The short answer is yes. The long answer is it depends on how the trip is filling up. If we have space on these trips after they have their initial push of people filling up, it becomes easier after that to bring people in to fill out the trip that just want to come from a local area. That is possible. So certainly reach out to us. It's a little harder for us to pull that off, but we have in the past.
Guys, thank you so much for all your questions. Again, the echoey room is not ideal, but that it kind of is what it is when we're traveling.
Yep.
And we really appreciate you sharing the podcast, rating and reviewing. As Todd said, we are doing Ring and Spa 2 days. You can still sign up.
I love it.
Go to hookedondriving.com for track days near you and the October 2024 2 days on Spa, 1 day on the Ring trip. Come back with us. Looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.